Apple says it sent OpenAI a cease and desist back in February. OpenAI never wrote back. 5 months later, Apple stopped writing letters and started filing lawsuits. And the fight is now about what OpenAI is building to replace the iPhone. Welcome to AI in 15 for Monday, July 13th, 2026. I'm Kate, your host.
And I'm Marcus, your co-host. It's Monday, and the weekend gave us fresh detail on the Apple lawsuit, plus a run of stories all circling the same idea, that being the smartest lab is quietly stopping being a business.
It really is, Marcus. Our lead, new specifics in Apple versus OpenAI, and why discovery is the scary part. Then a run worth your time. George Hott says the labs won't capture the value they create, and Hacker News agrees. Anthropic extends Fable 5 free access again, overnight, hours late, and it tells you something. Samba Nova raises $1 billion, and JP Morgan picks its chips over the cloud. And why a coding tool sending 33,000 tokens before it reads you became the developer story of the week. Lead story, Marcus. We led with the Apple suit on Saturday. What's actually new today?
Two things sharpen it, Kate. First, timeline. Apple's complaint says it sent OpenAI a cease and desist in February and got silence. That silence is now Exhibit A for Apple's argument that this wasn't a rogue employee, but a company that knew and didn't care. Second, the scope language. Apple says the alleged theft happened at every level. Not just product designs, but manufacturing processes, metal finishing techniques, even supply chain strategy. That's unusually specific for a trade secret filing.
Remind people why Apple's this worked up. OpenAI makes chatbots.
Because OpenAI is building a device, Kate. It bought Joni Ive's hardware firm, IO, for $6.5 billion. And it's widely reported to be working on an AI-native pocket gadget. Some are calling it an AI phone. The two ex-Apple names in the suit aren't junior people. Tang Tan spent 24 years at Apple, leading iPhone and watch design, and is now OpenAI's chief hardware officer. So this lands directly on the thing Apple most fears, being disrupted on its home turf.
And you flag discovery as the real danger. Why?
Because discovery is the part OpenAI can't spin, Kate. In a normal product cycle, OpenAI controls exactly what the world learns about its device and when. Litigation flips that. To defend itself, OpenAI may have to put internal design documents, timelines, and specs in front of a court, the very thing it spent a year keeping secret. So even if Apple never proves theft, the process itself could pry open what OpenAI is actually building. That's leverage, and Apple has effectively unlimited patience to use it.
So, the lawsuit is a weapon, even if Apple loses it.
That's the uncomfortable read, Kate. And I'll keep the asterisk on. These are allegations. OpenAI's on-record line is, "We have no interest in other companies' trade secrets." And it hasn't filed its substantive answer yet. But an ignored cease and desist, plus 400 former Apple staff, now flowing toward that hardware effort, that's a hard story for OpenAI to make small.
Story 2, Marcus, and it's the intellectual counterweight to a month of launch hype. George Hotz wrote an essay that blew up.
It did. 388 points on Hacker News, Kate. The title is, "I Love LLMs, I Hate Hype," and that tension is the whole piece. Hotz is genuinely enthusiastic about the models. What he's attacking is the manufactured FOMO around them, and specifically the frontier lab valuations. His argument? The labs don't deserve the numbers, because they're not the ones driving the underlying progress. He says the advances are happening mostly because of Moore's Law and general computing progress, not lab magic.
That's a strong claim. What's the line everyone quoted?
This one, Kate. It's not that AI won't create that much value, it's that they won't capture it. That's the whole bear case in a sentence. The technology can be enormously valuable, and the companies building it can still fail to make money. Because if capability keeps commoditizing, whoever sells it can't hold a premium. He also argues the safety and geopolitical framings around closed models are, in his telling, partly cover for fear of commodification, a way to keep open-source alternatives from eating the market.
Is he just being contrarian, though?
Partly. He dismisses AI takeover scenarios pretty glibly. And it's all just Moore's Law undersells real algorithmic work, Kate. But the value creation versus value capture point is serious, and it dovetails with everything we covered last week. 5 near-frontier models in 3 weeks. Meta undercutting on price. Grok undercutting on tokens. When the product gets cheap and interchangeable, the essay writes itself. Hots just said it loudest.
Story 3. Marcus, and it's a small thing that says a big thing. Anthropic extended free Fable 5 access again, overnight.
And late, Kate. That's the tell. The previous deadline had already passed when they moved it. Anthropic pushed free Fable 5 for paid subscribers out to July 19th. This is the second last-second reprieve. July 7th became July 12th, announced hours before the cutoff, and July 12th got superseded in the early hours of this morning. Pro, Max, Team, and some Enterprise users can spend up to half their weekly limits on Fable 5 until then.
Why does a scheduling wobble matter?
Because of what it admits, Kate. Anthropic's own line is that Fable 5 will come back to subscriptions when it has enough compute. That's a rare, plain statement that even the best capitalized lab is compute constrained on its flagship. Fable 5 is still the smartest model on the board, and Anthropic can't reliably keep it switched on for its paying customers. After the window, access moves to prepaid credits at $10 per million input and $50 per million output. That's the steepest pricing Anthropic has ever published.
And how are developers taking it?
Not warmly, Kate. The reaction across Hacker News isn't gratitude for the extension. It's frustration that they can't plan. If your weekly limit might vanish at midnight with a few hours' notice, you can't build a workflow on it. And several say they've quietly switched their main tool to Codex or GPT 5.6 Sol, precisely because the pricing there is boring and predictable. Which is the whole lesson of the week. Predictable limits are becoming a competitive weapon, almost regardless of who has the smartest model.
Story 4, Marcus. Follow the money down to the chips. Samba Nova just raised $1 billion.
$1 billion Series F at an $11 billion valuation. First close on July 8th, Kate. Led by General Atlantic, with BlackRock, Intel Capital, the Qatar Investment Authority, T. Rowe Price, and others in. And this is barely 5 months after their last big round. But the number isn't the story. The customer is.
Which is?
JP Morgan Chase, Kate. The bank picked Samba Nova as an inference infrastructure partner, deploying its systems on-premise for secure AI inference. Read that carefully. A Tier 1 bank chose to run AI on its own hardware, in its own building, rather than call a hyperscaler's cloud API. In a regulated industry, data control beats convenience. That's a real signal about where enterprise AI money actually goes.
And this connects to the HOTS argument, doesn't it?
Directly, Kate. If the model layer commoditizes, if intelligence gets cheap and interchangeable, then the durable value moves to whoever runs it cheaply and securely. And notice, the money's in inference, not training. Training is the glamorous part, but inference is where enterprises spend every single day. Samba Nova is betting the boring, secure, on-premise layer is the one that pays. And JP Morgan just validated the bet.
Last hit, Marcus, and it's the developer story of the week. a blog post about token overhead, topped Hacker News.
533 points, Kate. The claim, Claude Code sends roughly 33,000 tokens of system prompt and tool definitions before it even reads your request, versus about 7,000 for the open source open code. Over a full task, the gap widens to something like 199,000 metered input tokens against 41,000. And the big driver is subagents. Every spawn subagent carries its own bootstrap and tool definitions. Then its transcript gets fed back to the parent. One modest fanout was measured at a 4.2 times multiplier.
So the tool that helps you costs you before you've typed anything.
That's the framing that landed, Kate. And one commenter claimed $47,000 in token costs over 3 days after 23 subagents kept analyzing code unattended. Now the honest caveat, the author himself walked it back. Measuring token volume isn't the same as measuring value delivered per dollar. A contractor who charges more isn't worse if the work's better. So the number is real, but incomplete. A follow-up on actual task outcomes is coming.
But the anxiety underneath is real.
It is, Kate. As agentic coding goes mainstream, token overhead is becoming a genuine cost control problem, and it feeds a fair suspicion that subscription model incentives quietly push these tools toward burning more tokens. Whatever the final accounting, how much does my agent spend before it helps me is now a question teams are actually asking.
One to watch tomorrow, Marcus.
Nathan Lambert's piece at Interconnects, Kate. He argues open weight models have about 6 months to live. His worry, U.S. regulation aimed at Chinese origin models can set a precedent that ends up restricting all high-capability open models, disadvantaging American open source most of all. If any White House move on open models surfaces this week, that's the frame to have in your head.
Agree or counter?
Agree, it's the one to watch, Kate, with a caution. It's a prediction with a clock on it, and clocks in AI regulation slip. Watch for an actual rule, not a warning about one.
That's your AI in 15 for today. See you tomorrow.